Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, welcome.
Let me get that down. I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul. This is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast, and another couple weeks of baseball down, and another rumble against the Houston Astros.
A rumble. Ooh, yes, that is right. Houston Trashtros once again stirring the pot, as is their nature. So I guess, you know, I can't really get too mad. It's kind of like when you get a stray dog and he starts biting everybody and pissing on the carpet. You know, it's kind of like, well, okay, it's, you know, he's a stray dog. He has no class. He's, you know,
he's never
raised
been,
on the streets.
Never been trained, never been punished for behavior, you know, so...
Yeah, this, all right, so, well, and now we know the punishments, obviously. We're, of course, referring to the Ramon Laureano, Alex Cintron fiasco, and that little debacle that took place a few days ago. And, Laureano gets pegged three times in the series, twice in one game.
And also twice by the same pitcher, pitcher in question, who threw the ball that hit him, that set off this whole... Fandango.
Right. And, you know, it was kind of funny because after he hit him, you know, he wasn't like, I don't think he was so mad, but like he wasn't happy.
He was clearly upset.
Yeah.
He was pointing and saying, hey, look, if you're going to throw the slider, snap your wrist down. Yeah. It'll break better.
Pantomiming the wrist snap. Yeah. That, I kind of like that because that was just super just in your face. But he had no... He didn't seem like he had any real intention of fighting anybody. He wasn't going to charge the mound.
He just wanted to let him know that he was upset. Hey, stop throwing at me.
It's the big leagues, bro. You know, if you can't snap that slider off properly, don't throw it. Yeah. And then, of course, as he's walking to first, Alex Cintron,
it was actually after he was already on the base with his back turned.
Was he already on base?
He was already
I think it was like as he was walking, but yeah.
After he was on the base, he was calming down. He was trying to calm down anyway, and then the Houston Astros batting coach,
Alex Cintron.
Alex Cintron. Mm-hmm. He stepped out of the dugout, and there is a camera angle showing him stepping out of the dugout while Laureano was already on first base and started jawing at him.
Chirping away, yeah.
And... you know, there's a few things said between the two, and it looked like threats of a fight were made, and then all of a sudden, Laureano charged the dugout.
It was Cintron made this move. He like instigated it, not just he was saying come and get it. Basically, he was saying come here. And then
he said, come and fight me.
Right. And then Laureano's like, no. And then Cintron literally, he does like that, like the jerk step where he takes a fast step forward to make it seem like he's about to. So Laureano, of course, all right, well, if you're going to come after me, I'll come get you.
I think he actually then charged, though, after Cintron said, in Spanish, something mm-hmm. about Laureano's mother.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
No se habla español over here, but I do know enough kitchen Spanish to kind of imagine what may have been said.
Oh yeah.
So that's what actually like triggered the charge. He was then tackled by a former teammate, catcher for the Astros, yeah. And
Garneau. He was thankful for. Laureano was.
He was. That was probably he said that was probably the best possible outcome. Saved him from probably more than just 6 days fine if he right. actually had thrown a haymaker or two at Cintron, deserved or otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And so basically the end result was Laureano and rookie catcher Austin Allen were ejected after the scuffle. And, of course, not surprisingly, no Houston Trashtro was ejected. Like, what's going on with all this? How are they just ejecting everybody else after they're trying to defend themselves, basically? Because that's more or less what happened with Joe Kelly and the Dodgers. You know, Correa started walking toward the Dodger dugout. Well, of course we're going to, you know, the Dodgers are going to defend themselves. In this case, this guy's chirping away, literally instigating a fight, saying, come get me, come at me, whatever. Your mom's a insert expletive here. What do you expect them to do? Yeah, sure, maybe in a perfect world, especially now with COVID regulations and everything, he should have just stood there and took it. But I mean,
yeah, he was already upset. There was no reason for that insult to the thing. Of course, all three games of this series. This took place in the last game, but in all three games during the Astros batting practice, there was an airplane towing a banner behind it that said Houston Asterix.
Really?
Really?
I did not see that.
The A's and the A's fans have definitely been letting the Houston Astros in maybe less than subtle ways that they are upset at them anyway. But to the A's credit, they did not throw at any Astros players. They beat them soundly three right. games straight, which is ultimately the best. And it was the Astros that left a questionable hijinks.
Yeah, once again, just looking trashy as usual. And at least MLB came down with a slightly fair punishment. Although, I guess because of the new rules, you have to give anybody involved some sort of suspension. So, yeah, as you said, Laureano got a 6-game suspension and an undisclosed fine. And then Cintron got a 20-game suspension with an undisclosed fine. Of course, Laureano is going to appeal it, I believe. And so right. The suspension was originally supposed to be slated for Tuesday, yesterday, as we're recording this. We'll see. I mean, I'm sure he'll end up serving it, probably just like Joe Kelly will, even though now Joe Kelly's on the DL, or on the IL, excuse me, which you cannot serve your punishment while you're injured. So I was thinking he probably just should have just said, I'll serve my suspension, and then unofficially went on the IL. But what are you going to do? Alex Cintron was quoted as saying, I accept MLB's suspension and will learn from this. Although I never referenced Ramon's mother, my actions were inappropriate. I apologize for my part in Sunday's unfortunate incident. As coaches, we are held to a higher standard and should be an example to the players. Hopefully, other coaches will learn from my mistakes so that this never happens again in the future.
This is madness!
Come on. Do you believe anything he says? I don't.
No, I'm not surprised at all that he denied saying it. And of course, since the hot mics are off on the field, unless someone comes forward other than Laureano to say what Cintron may or may not have said, we'll sure. never know. A's,
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, nobody on the Trasher side is going to be saying anything, obviously, you know, Fifth Amendment and the like. But I'm sure all the A's fans or players heard exactly what he was saying. You know, now everybody can hear everything.
And then, of course, also there's the argument that Cintron shouldn't have even been in the dugout at all this year because he was one of the coaches instrumental in the whole sign-stealing scandal and probably should have been suspended for the yeah. year, like his manager, Beltran and Cora.
I thought they all were, but yeah, I guess hitting coaches fell under the radar a little bit there.
Maybe so.
Nobody knew his name before. Now everybody knows his name.
Yep. And his name is Mud, especially in Oakland.
Now, speaking of the A's, on a lighter note, you know the A's hit 2 walk-off grand slams in their first 11 games of the season?
It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, no other team has ever done that in history, as you probably have guessed. In fact, getting 2 walk-off slams in a week and a half at any point in the season is virtually impossible. It's only happened twice before, and the last time was the 2017 Blue Jays, but then before that, you got to go all the way back to 1952 with the Red Sox in a week and a half at any point in any season. It's pretty crazy, and so they've already done it twice. And that was just the first 11 games. Now there's, you know, obviously been more than that. Now some teams will be playing their 20th game today. So that's pretty cool. What's also interesting is that both of those A's grand slams off of, who was it, Hobie Miller for the Angels and Jesse Chavez for the Rangers were done on exactly one pitch. The only pitch those pitchers threw.
Wow.
This is, in fact, the only time since, well, pitch counts have been recorded since the late 80s that any pitcher has given up a grand slam, walk-off or otherwise, on their only pitch of the game. I'll one up that. To get even crazier, this also means that the A's have hit more walk-off grand slams in a week and a half than the Giants have hit in the last 61 years.
Jeez.
One. Giants haven't done it once. Yeah. Their only walk-off grand slam in that time was Bobby Bonds in 1973 against the Dodgers. But, yeah, only once.
Right. Yeah.
So they've already doubled.
Well, you know, grand slams are a rare and wonderful things. And if they come to walk off a game, you know, that it's got to be even a rarer feat. So it's pretty spectacular what the A's have been able to do this last week and a half.
Oh, yeah. Now, tomorrow, Thursday, was supposed to be the Cardinals-Tigers doubleheader, which, of course, now is postponed.
Right.
You know, it was supposed to be a makeup of last week's series, that postponement when the Cardinals outbreak first began, but, you know, it's still unknown whether the series will even ever be rescheduled at this point, because, I mean, logistically, obviously, they still have to play everybody else, and, well, who knows? I mean, we're going to be seeing a lot of new things.
You know, we're going to see, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Cardinals and the Marlins. You know, these teams have both lost a significant amount of player and personnel to the virus at this point and have played significantly less games than the rest of their respective divisions.
Yeah.
Which also has screwed up the schedule of several other teams at this point. So when you look at the standings, there are very few divisions that... well, I mean, ultimately, four out of the, six, I can't do math in my head right now, four of the divisions don't have an even number of games played through all the teams, which makes counting wins for who gets first place very tricky. I mean, right now the Marlins have played 10 less games than basically the rest of their division, but have the highest win percentage and is therefore in first place. And that just does not seem right to me. If the playoffs were to begin today, would you include the Marlins in as a playoff team?
Can't. I don't think you can. I think there needs to
be. It's unfair to...
Can't say that, yeah.
It's unfair to the teams that have played more games.
Right, of course. You know, and so is there going to be a cutoff? Like, is it going to be like a 50-game minimum kind of thing? But then, yeah, like you're saying, like the teams that are actually playing the full 60, they're not going to be too happy, especially if they get beat by a team that has a better winning percentage.
Yeah. Right, or, yeah.
I know, yeah. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. Because, like, what if this outbreak didn't happen on July 28th instead of happened on August 28th, you know, I mean, that or September 15th or something, where two entire teams just aren't playing at all.
Right. And if they were in first place at the time, then what? Yeah. Are they going to be able to be able to field a team in the postseason tournament.
Yeah. Probably not, but maybe. And, you know, maybe you just have to forfeit and say, sorry, I mean, there's already 16 teams, right, going into the postseason. Right. I think now they're looking at that like, uh-oh, maybe there's only going to be 16 teams left.
Well,
everybody wins. Everybody makes the postseason. Hey, everybody gets a participation trophy.
And just maybe. The team with the best overall record wins the series, the commissioner's trophy this year.
Maybe. I mean,
and speaking of that postseason tournament, they've been talking about how to do it already. If they're gonna form a bubble in the greater right. Chicago area to play the games in
somewhere in the middle like that.
Well, yeah, in the two Chicago stadiums and in Milwaukee, to have, you know, and just have a nice big bubble where just the teams are that are in the postseason. No one has to travel too far, and yeah. everyone is playing in the same thing. I mean,
but how does like home field work? I mean, what if the Cubs make it? The Cubs look like they will be making
well,
it.
Well, no, there's not going to be any fans in the stadium.
Well,
so.
I know, but, you know, it's kind of like the Blue Jays playing in Buffalo. At first, I was thinking, oh, you know, what's the big deal? They can play at PNC like we were talking about last week, and then obviously Pittsburgh didn't want them to. But then I looked at the new stadium, and I was like, wow, you know, they really did a good job because when you walk in and you don't see your colors, it's just different. You know, you don't feel like you're at home. And so what they did in Buffalo is, you know, I mean, everything is blue. Everything is Blue Jays. Even the seats have covers. I mean, everything is Blue Jays. So it really does feel like a home field, which is kind of nice for them. But if we're talking about everybody playing at Wrigley or everybody playing in Milwaukee or something, you know, those two teams are going to feel a lot better than, you know, the Dodgers or the Rockies coming in. You know, I mean, well, Rockies is still up in the air, but, you know, we'll see. But you know, I don't know exactly what you're saying,
and it's an interesting question. But I mean, I think without the actual fans in the seats, you know, I think that yeah, maybe there's a slight psychological edge walking into the friendly confines. But without the fans there, some of that I think is very much mitigated. Just because that is a big part of the feel of the home, you know, the home field advantage is having, you know, the tens of thousands screaming fans.
it's the feeling, though. You know, as the great Yogi Berra once said, 90% of the game is half mental. You know, I would say it's somewhere around there. That's about 90% mental. You know, the game is played between their ears. In a lot of ways, you know, this is how you could see somebody like Christian Yelich or Cody Bellinger start the entire, you know, the first 2-3 weeks of the season hitting under the Mendoza line. You know, it's strange. I mean, a lot of that's physical reps and everything, I'm sure, too. But, you know, the worse you do, Chris Davis with a C can attend to that, you know, attest to that, I would imagine. You know, you start pressing, you start wondering what's going on. I don't know. Look, I think it's mental aspect cannot and should not be underrated.
I get that, and you know, and maybe it would be weird for Cubs players to be playing in Wrigley Field wearing away grays. But you know, if the Cubs weren't in this tournament, and say we get a Dodgers Yankees World Series, you know, the for the finals of right. this postseason tournament. And both teams were playing in Wrigley.
Sure. That's fine.
Then, you know, neither really has that advantage. And it doesn't matter who's wearing the whites
Although
and who's
you
wearing
could
the grays.
Say, you still even then could say the Dodgers have the advantage because they're used to going to Wrigley a few
not
times
this
a year.
Year.
Well, I know. But, you know, in general.
And not in October.
Yeah. No, it's true. I think you're right in that sense. But what if the Cubs make the World Series?
Well, then, you know, maybe they shift to Milwaukee.
But what if they're playing Milwaukee for the pennant? Well, then I guess they could just go back and forth.
Yeah.
What's that drive? Like a 3-hour drive? Three and a half, maybe four?
It's less than that. It's probably less than three hours. I've made the drive only once.
Okay.
So, and I started from much farther north than Milwaukee, so it was, you know, it wasn't a bad drive at all.
And then on the other side, Minnesota, right? Target Field's pretty close to Chicago as well, right? About a 3-hour, 4-hour drive as well.
Yeah, that'd that'd probably be a thing, and maybe Detroit, maybe Detroit,
right.
could also be close enough to be able to play some games in. So they'd be have enough flexibility to be able to play several games at the same time in this big Midwestern bubble, Midwestern baseball bubble.
Well, as it stands, Friday. Well, the Cardinals will be playing the White Sox in Chicago on Friday night. And Friday will be 3 weeks since the Cardinals' opening day with only 5 games played. Man. In order to complete, just, you know, for perspective, in order to complete a full 60-game season, St. Louis would need to play 55 games in 45 days.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I mean, it's going to have to, right?
But I mean, even
do it. It's gonna have to happen.
It's gonna have to be basically. It's gonna affect the teams that they have to play as well,
right.
Too. You know, all those games when they go and see and they play all the teams that they have missed. I guess there's what, like 3 to 5 teams at this point. Every single time they play these for these same teams for the rest of the season, they're going to have to play a doubleheader against them.
Yeah,
every single game. That'd be the only way. And
but then those other teams would get more days off then, right? Because on days that they were originally scheduled.
But those days off had already passed.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, unless they were
for the Cardinals, yeah. But I'm talking about like for the other teams that they'd be playing.
But they wouldn't get any extra days off that they haven't already had from missing games against the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they're not going to get any additional days off after they play all these doubleheaders.
Now, this is an interesting wrinkle for fantasy purposes, and especially in our league where we count quality starts over wins. And we also, as like a little bonus, we have complete games as one of our stats. And as we saw on opening day, with these new rules especially, you know, a game is official after, what, 4 or 5 innings if it gets rained out or whatever. And now, doubleheader games only go 7 innings. So we've seen pitchers get complete games, I mean, in way higher of a tick than I was expecting starting this season. And I'm sure now, if St. Louis is going to be playing a lot of 10 more doubleheaders, supposedly, you know, as the season goes on, whoever has those pitchers are going to be getting a lot of CGs, man, and those CGs are very valuable. So
they are
definitely. I don't have any St. Louis Cardinals pitchers, nor do I want any. But now it might look like a little bit better,
and yeah,
for strange leagues like ours,
except for the fact that you know, who knows when they'll be back and how long they'll be, you know, be able to, how long it'll be until they're able to actually go those 6-7 innings.
Why?
Complete. Yeah. Because, you know, they took a very long time in this league for any pitcher really to have any quality starts.
The
quality
strength,
starts,
yeah,
are very low so far, yeah, this year.
Wins are very low this year as well, too, and, you know, leagues that do wins, because a lot of guys are getting pulled at 4 2/3.
Right.
Just so that, you know, you can get a fresh arm in there that doesn't have to go 3 and stuff like that. And obviously, we're used to seeing that with quality starts, guys going 5 2/3, 5 1/3. You know, let him go out for the 6th and see how he does, and if he gets in trouble, we're going to yank him. And that's been happening for years. But now even the wins are in question.
Right.
Which was already a questionable, or, you know,
right? Because now need to, and for an official game, you just need 4 innings instead of 5. It just doesn't seem right.
All right, find me some good players, living players.
Now, man, the West is good. Can we just admit that right now? I mean, I know this is West Coast bias, but
I mean, clearly it's not
Midwest bias, because we don't know any of the distances between these parks. I mean, I know you've driven it once, but it's like a shot in the dark based on, like, you know, elementary school geography.
The distance between Chicago and Milwaukee is definitely much less than the distance between San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Okay.
That I know for sure.
All right. And that's doable by car. It's not fun always, but yeah, it's definitely possible. It's some sort of bubble type scenario Probably, I'm sure, will happen. Now, there's a lot of people doing great in the West, but somebody who's not doing so good would be Shohei Ohtani, man. I mean, at least on the pitching side. You know, his pitching stats have left much to be desired, to say the least.
And he's not the only pitcher in this book.
Well, that's
book.
True. That's true. But he has, you know, a big, you know, a lot of fanfare around him. A lot of eyes are on him.
Whole thing, yeah.
I mean, because he was insane, man. That guy used to throw high 90s. I mean, anyway, and since he probably won't start again this season, he may have accomplished something that no pitcher ever has. Now, it might be tinged with a bit of ignobility, but he will be the only pitcher in history to make at least two starts and finish a season with more walks than outs.
That is definitely a dubious achievement.
He's got 8 walks right now with 5 outs.
Ouch. That's not good.
Sorry, Shohei. We still love you.
Yeah.
You're still doing great things.
Along those same lines, you know, Madison Bumgarner with 7 home runs and 17.1 innings. I just...
As soon as you say Madison Bumgarner with home runs, I'm like, wow, he hit that many home runs.
Yeah, no, he'd be having a much a better season if that were true.
Yeah,
he'd be up there with the lead leaguers in home run.
I think he'd be leading. Yes. That 5-year, $85 million contract isn't looking too nice now. Especially since he's now on the DL or the IL. Yeah. Man, how many times? It's going to take me 5 years to get used to IL,
and then they'll probably change it back then.
No, they'll change it to like UL or something. Who knows? He's on the IL, but I guess it's not too shocking. But you know, he's not the kind of guy that you've heard in the past going on the IL unless it was for something stupid like extracurricular activities. He has mid back strain, which makes sense for a big guy. But man, yeah, his velocity is down.
Yeah, way down.
Like in the 80s.
Yeah, 86 to 88. Yeah, is where his fastball is. So. You know, he's got to figure out what's going on with his back, and then he also has to figure out how to turn into a Greg Maddux.
Greinke's figured that out. I don't know if Madbum can figure that out. You know, when you're I guess he's never really a flamethrower, but he was always a formidable presence.
Oh well, yeah, right? and he had the consistent, you know, mid to low 90s fastball,
right?
And you know, incredible command. But right now, it's looking...
pedestrian. Yeah. No, wait, you said 7 home runs he's given up, not 17.
7 home runs in 17 innings.
Oh, God. Including 4 in 2 innings on this last Sunday. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He has his ERA is now sitting at 9.35 in 4 starts.
No good at all.
Now, on the other side of that would be Juan Soto finally coming back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard about this guy. He might be a pretty good player, as it turns out.
Hey, now.
Yes. He is slashing 364, 391, 773 slash line right now. Now, it's only been 6 games, but he looks like he hasn't missed a beat. You know, it's just really good to see him back. Obviously, he was my first pick, so, you know, it was tough to...
Right.
But I know everybody's crying over something. Somebody's out. Some pitcher's not playing. I mean, some people just aren't even playing, not even because they're hurt, but... So, fantasy woes continue for basically everybody.
And... Yeah, it's a very strange season with fantasy this year. It's on one level, it's hard to keep up with.
Very strange. Yeah,
because I mean, it just every single day, you know, something changes. Something someone comes down with COVID. Someone opts out.
Somebody opts in. Yeah, it's true. I'm just gonna. If I don't win, I'm gonna say it was a pure luck year. You know, this year didn't have anything to do with strategy or intelligence. It's all luck. But if I win, then it's 100% legit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Now, have you been following the 400 watch? Because we've been talking, obviously, about
I have.
Things that might happen this year.
There's definitely a few players that have, you know, through a quarter of the way through the season, almost a third of the way through the season, have, certainly are tracking for extremely high batting averages.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, the guy on the Oh, wow. Juan Soto just hit a 466-foot home run as we were speaking. As we were talking.
That's great.
Pretty good. Of course, we're talking about Chuck Nasty up in the Mile High City. That would be one Charlie Blackman, who came into Wednesday hitting 500, but he was now hitting 472 after he went 0 for today. 0 for 4. Anyway. So major league leading batting average, obviously. The major league, like the total batting average for the whole league right now is sitting at 235.
Right.
Pretty low. It's that kind of year where, again, like we were talking about Yelly and Belly to a lesser extent, but not too much. Just not really finding the ball. Well, Charlie Blackman seems to be seeing it pretty well, especially since he started the year going 1 for 12. You know, so I think that's kind of a good sign. And hopefully should be a nice sort of positive boost for anybody else who's in a slump.
Right.
Look, this guy starts 1-12, and now he's hitting 500 after 17 games. Again, 472 now. But, you know, he's the fifth player in the last 50 years with at least a 500 average through the first 17 games. Now, I'm sure you remember 05, Barry Bonds.
Right.
Of course. And then Larry Walker did it in 97. Rod Carew did it with the Angels in 83, and Tony Perez, of all people, with the Reds, did it in 1970. And of those first 16 games, Chuck Nasty has played in 8 in Colorado and 8 on the road. So,
right, it's split. He will still have to bat higher than his career average to maintain the maintain the pace that he is on.
His career batting average at Coors is .352,
right,
which is pretty damn good. But yeah, obviously,
the difference with this season and all of those players that you just mentioned at the same point in the season that has, terms of how many games played, is that, you know, after 20 games, there's only 40 games left. And after 20 games in a normal circumstance, there's 140 games left. Right. So the likelihood that a player can maintain this breakneck pace is much less under normal circumstances than it is right now.
What, you're saying it's easier now or it's harder?
It's going to be easier, yeah, I think. With only 40 games now, it's much easier. You know,
right? Because if you're in that groove, you can ride that groove.
This also brings up, now, I know it doesn't have to be, but it seems like should Blackman be able to finish in the high 400s or even close to
high 400s? Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, right, you know, I mean, even if, okay. I mean, you know, if he can keep the pace that he is and keep hitting close to 500,
yeah,
you know, it would be amazing. And it would put the legendary 56 games in a row in serious jeopardy.
The hit streak?
I would imagine the hit streak, yeah.
Yes,
he can have a bad game and then come back and have a couple games where he hits, you know, 3 or 4. But it seems much more likely.
Well, it can't happen now. Not with him, at least. Because he went 0 for today.
Right. So it still puts it in jeopardy. And he's not the only player that is in a position to maintain above... 400.
Well, that's interesting. You know, it almost seems like hitting 400 would be more difficult than just hitting 56 straight. I mean, you'd have to basically hit it in every single game this season.
Well, and that's, that's what it comes down to. I mean, you get
almost
hit
seems
in every
more
single
likely.
Game.
Yeah, if you're a leadoff guy, you're going to get up bat five times.
Now, yeah, but the consistency in the hitting would suggest that, you know, it would put that 56 games in a row hit streak in jeopardy. Maybe not, but
yeah, you never know. I mean, David Fletcher with the Angels has an 11 game hit streak now, I guess that he still couldn't really do it then, could he? No, no. But, you know, so I guess nobody's going to do it this year. But I see what you're saying. Somebody could have.
Yeah.
Well, Donovan Solano has a 15-game hit streak right now with the Giants. And Charlie Blackmon did coming into today, but no dice. So Solano, he could get to, there's 40 games left. Well, there's 41 games left.
Well, including tonight, yeah.
So he could tie it, right?
Yeah.
He could. He's the only one left.
In theory, he could.
He could hit 56, and then the season
will
ends.
He? That would be awesome if he did, but no, I don't think that he will.
Wow. All right. So Donovan. No, but he's not even starting today. He's out.
But
so, yeah, no. No.
But it wouldn't. It wouldn't break the streak because it'd be games that he played in. But, I mean, in terms of,
I'm saying, yeah, there's not enough games left because he's not starting today. I know because he's on my fantasy team.
Right.
And, but anyway, yeah. So you're still safe, Joey D, for now. But who knows? We play another truncated season next year. Who knows? Now, of course, there is one big hurdle for Charlie Blackmon finishing with 400, and that's that he hasn't faced the Dodgers yet. So Colorado still has 10 games against LA, which is almost a quarter of their remaining schedule. So,
right. I mean, and it's. I mean, who knows? But Donovan Solano has definitely faced the Dodgers and has still
he's still batting
.458.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
I you know, just because he hasn't faced the Dodgers doesn't mean a thing.
10 games, though. But, yeah, it's true. Now, we've been through a few weeks of this season. Has your opinion on the sort of canned noise...
I don't like it.
...changed?
I don't
Has
like
not
it.
Changed. Okay.
I still don't like the canned thing. As a fan, I think it's just unnecessary.
I agree.
I'd rather hear the sounds of the game.
God, that'd be nice.
However, thinking about it, as a player, I don't think that I would mind it so much. I tell you from experience, I used to play back in high school. I know that seems like a long time for some people. I will not say what year I graduated. However, when I went to a small school, we had a small team. We played in a league playing other small schools around the Bay Area. One of the teams that we played was out in Fremont, California, in the East Bay, as a California School for the Deaf.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, that game was one of the weirdest experiences of my life, playing a baseball game in very near total silence.
Wow.
It was an unusual, warm, muggy, overcast day in the Bay Area, and it was out in close to the hills in the back of Fremont. If you're familiar with the area, it is quiet. The only thing that would otherwise make noise is that there were train tracks somewhat nearby. During the game, of course, there was no train that came by. There were no birds chirping.
I remember
standing out in left field trying to find some source of sound other than my own breathing. It was very strange.
That's eerie.
Obviously, the other team, they were deaf, so they didn't communicate with audio.
Right.
So,
ooh, man,
the other kids in the school who were there to watch, the kids on the bench, the coaches, no one was making any noise of any kind, and I totally believe that it affected my team.
So don't leave us hanging. Did you guys win or lose?
Oh, we got thumped. but that wasn't unusual at all. I think
you'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
But I mean, it was very strange, and I don't know if I was if any of my other teammates really understood what the difference was. They were all very much city kids growing up in San Francisco, where it's pretty much noisy all the time.
Yeah.
No matter where you are in the city.
Right.
And even later on when we played them again here in San Francisco, it was still strangely quiet just because the on-the-field chatter was half of what it would otherwise be.
So this is interesting because, you know, who are the players playing for? They're playing for us, right? Without fans, there's no game.
Well, they're...
Although...
They're playing to win.
This year is challenging that theory.
I mean, they're playing to win. But they're playing for money. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But the whole thing is predicated on let's play in front of fans who enjoy the game.
I wonder if there's a way to. Well, yeah, I guess there wouldn't be, huh? Because they're piping that through the house PA all that.
Yeah,
all
and
that
it noise. comes from the soundtrack comes from MLB the Show, a video game. So it's already
pretty
much computer generated crowd noise anyway.
That is pretty strange.
You know, I think that, you know, as a player standing out in the field, that I wouldn't mind it so much. But listening to it on the TV,
yeah,
totally unnecessary.
I agree.
And I wish it would go away.
I agree. Let us know what you think. West Coast Bias, at West Coast Bias BB, Twitter, email us, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. The Giants bats... on a different note, are looking pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, their defense, maybe not so much. And that brings us to this week's
Ignoble Award of the Week.
Yes, we had many candidates this year.
This week.
This year is also true. But this week definitely had a lot of candidates. But yeah, the Giants' defense over the past year... Well, This year they have been doing well. They are leading the league by quite a ways of errors.
Real
21 errors through 19 games.
Ouch.
Played.
Whoa.
And this is a team that over the past decade has been known as primarily a team that did well with some timely hitting. And pitching and defense. And this year, the defense has not been there. They've had multiple games where they've had more than two errors. And it's just...
I've even seen Brandon Crawford get some errors. He's a gold. He's a platinum glove.
He's
definitely a multi-gold glove winner.
He is a multi-gold glove winner. And it's...
Shame!
It's bad. And... The, on the same, it's not counted as an error on the scoreboard, but the Giants catchers this year already have more catcher interference calls
four
than Buster Posey has in his entire career.
Wow.
Three.
Wow.
And most of them happened, you know, early on in his career.
Now, has Joey Bart played at all?
He's still trying to get him more experience.
Well, that's what they're saying, but they're also trying to control him for an extra year, right?
There was an article today in the San Francisco Chronicle about that and why, and Farhan Zaidi saying that, you know, getting these players the reps and AAA will benefit them in terms of confidence.
But yeah,
and,
there's
and,
no triple A
thing, not this year. But
so
but
what is he doing?
But I mean, he's getting reps against his team.
Against
he's getting
his dad.
He's getting instruction. You know, in the squad. I have no idea how those alternate are staying in shape and game ready. But
I don't think they are. Based on you know the way people have been hitting so far this season,
they had brought up the fact that players like Mike Trout and Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager all spent, they were not rushed up through AAA, even though they may have been, it looked like they were ready. They were still given 500 or so at bats before they were sure. brought up to the big leagues, and as a result they didn't have as big an adjustment when they got to the big league level. And so once, you know, player comes up too early, has a bad spell, go, you know, 1 for 22 or whatever, is gonna affect that player's confidence going forward.
Oh, you think almost like in a permanent sense?
Well, yeah, and that's what Farhan's argument about keeping Bart, off of the big league.
So it has nothing to do with controlling him for an extra year, right?
Well, I mean, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but but that's not what they're saying it is about.
Well, yeah, I know that's what the Cubs also said about Chris Bryant. I see what you're saying, though, obviously, because we have seen it work, like with Bryce Harper. He was like 90 straight out of community college or whatever. But then, yeah, I mean, those three guys, Trout, Belly, and Seager, all won Rookie of the Year their first year. They were ready. I think Trout won. I know Belly and Seager did. I just assume right. Trout. When it comes to like when in doubt, I just assume Trout did it. You know?
Right.
Pretty
yeah.
sure he won Rookie. It might have been some weird year where somebody else came, but I'm pretty sure it was Trout. You know, yeah. I'm sure there's Angels fans screaming. Yeah, of course. No, yeah, I guess we'll see. But the Giants, again, they're putting up runs.
They are. They're hitting the ball, and that has been very very encouraging and very fun to watch.
Yeah,
and even it looks like that Clayton Kershaw has a new nemesis.
I don't know about that, but possibly.
Well, I mean, two home runs in one game against Kershaw is a very
rare feat.
Rare feat. In fact, it's only happened before Austin Slater did it a few nights ago. It had only happened 6 other times.
Really? Yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, he's
figured you could count it on one hand. Now, I'm assuming Paul Goldschmidt is on that list.
No, in fact, he is not.
Really?
Really, I mean, he may have hit multiple home runs against Clayton Kershaw,
he was such a Dodger killer.
But not necessarily in one game.
What about AJ Pollock? Because back when he was healthy on Arizona, he was a stud against the
Dodgers.
Yeah,
no, he's not on that list either. It's a very interesting list, but it is
a Philly. There's got to be names. A Philly on that list, maybe
a Philly
like Matt Stairs or something. Some stupid.
No, actually. Few names that you probably have heard of. Okay. Jason Wirth.
Well, all right, there you go. That's
Adam,
Mr. Philly.
Adam
right
Dunn.
Oh, big donkey. Uh-huh. All right, well, if anyone's going to do it, I want Adam Dunn. Wow, lefty, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, of course, there's Cargon.
Cargo?
Cargo? Cargon? Gonzalez? I don't know. Carlos Cargon? Gonzalez.
And totally redeem yourself.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Cargo was a beast. And another lefty. That's so crazy.
Yeah,
Cargo. How good was Cargo, man?
He is really, really good.
Oh,
and
my God.
And looking at the stats of Clayton Kershaw, it looks like the team that he's given the most home runs up to is the Colorado Rockies. That
sounds about right. It's also the team he got his no hitter on.
You also may have heard of this guy, Jay Bruce. He did it.
Whatever happened to Jay Bruce? Wow, Jay Bruce.
And then Jose Reyes.
Wow, shortstop Jose Reyes?
Yeah. And
who just retired, by the way, I think, like last week I saw that announcement.
So, yeah.
And I think everybody was thinking the same thing, like, oh, you haven't retired yet? Okay, continue.
and then just last year, the most recent before this past week, was Bo Bichette.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that one now. Yeah, I see. I try to block all these out
of
my memory.
I'm sure. Well, that's why I like to bring these things up, since, you know, it seems invalid to bring up 2017 these days.
But, so who was it? Austin Slater that just did it?
Austin Slater, yeah.
Yeah.
From out of nowhere. Just, you know.
Yeah. That might be the only two home runs he ever hits in his career. And if it's off the greatest pitcher in the last 50 years, well, there you go.
That's well, yeah, and it won't be the only home run that he hits this year, but
well, we'll see about that. Now, what was up with Well, first of all, why was Pence playing left field? And second of all, what happened to that no-hitter, man? I mean, I know this is old news now, but I got you here in front of me, so, you know, I figure we should rehash that. Like,
there's been some great memes going on, and Hunter Pence definitely has had a good sense of humor about it. But yeah, that was an unusual thing. Brutal. He completely lost sight of that, and it doesn't happen often, but it does kind of happen, and at least he didn't get hit right on the head with it.
Well, he was like 30 yards away from it. I know. There was no chance of that happening.
Yeah. So it was, you know.
The attack, like the Canseco home run.
It's one of those, how often is the night sky or the twilight sky over Dodger Stadium overcast? I think that had a lot to do with it, just the fading light.
But you would expect he's used to that playing here in San Francisco, you know. If anybody could pick him out of the sky, it should be him playing virtually his whole career. Well, I guess not his whole career, but virtually his career.
Most successful portion of his career, right, perhaps. But, I mean, he's spent a long time with the Astros. But...
Now, speaking of Giants, I don't know why it's like an all Giants episode, but the Heinemann brothers.
Does
this ring a bell?
This does. It was a very cute story. Yeah, the first time that.
Well, okay, so let's set the stage.
Fill everyone in. Yeah.
The Tyler Heinemann, who plays for the Giants, and Scott Heinemann plays for the Rangers, are brothers. And they started against each other in the big leagues for the first time on Saturday. So a while back now. But Scott hit a home run on a pitch called by his brother.
Right.
Now, can you name the last time that happened?
No, I cannot.
It actually happened only twice before this, ever.
I would believe that. I would imagine that brothers being able to play against each other doesn't happen that often.
Now, what brothers can you think of that this could have happened?
Well, there's the Alomar brothers.
Okay, good guess.
There is...
incorrect.
Well, I'm just looking at brothers, not trying to think of brothers in the league more than brothers who actually played against each other.
That's all you got?
Off the top of my head, yes.
That would be the Molina. Come on, the Molina brothers.
Oh, of course.
2010, September 8th, Jose Molina homered while his brother Benji was catching. And then May 8th, 2006, Benji homered while Jose was catching. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yadi need not apply. That is pretty cool.
He just needs to get well.
It's kind of crazy that the Molina brothers have only done it twice, even though they've played a combined 45 seasons in the bigs and have shown up in 4,456 games by my count. I could be wrong. And the Heinemann brothers do it in their first attempt. It's pretty crazy. Hey, that's 2020 COVID baseball, baby.
It is, and it was a very cute moment on the field. Managers agreed to it beforehand that the brothers would be the ones to go out to exchange the lineup cards with the umpires. They took a picture together. It was really cute. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Now, do you remember the movie 300?
Yes.
Didn't it star Mookie Betts?
This is Sparta.
Well, it should have.
It should have, huh?
Mookie is most certainly the only member in the 300 club.
The 300 club?
Yeah, indeed. Well, actually, he's probably even the only member of the 300 club. But now, we all know Mookie is a damn near professional bowler, racking up at least three recorded perfect 300 games. Actually, his mom is like, I think, even better. She's like pro, I think, herself. But on his first home run as a Dodger, all 375 feet of it, he became the only player in StatCast history to hit a home run over 300 feet while in the same game getting a 300-foot-plus outfield assist. All the way to third base. Remember that? Man, I'm sure you saw that. It was just insane. Oh, yeah. Now, you know, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it is.
Was that that should have been the seventh inning stretch?
That's an awesome stat. I love that. I wonder, and he's the only player who has been able to do that and also throw bowling game.
The 300 bowling is sort of just the icing on the cake that he alone can eat. As it is.
I see.
Yeah, the 305-foot put out from right field to third base.
No doubt, that was a spectacular throw.
Like vintage Ichiro from right field, you know, just gunning dudes out. Like, you do not run. It's just so nice to see, like, a Puig-type arm in right field again for the Dodgers, you know? Mm. I mean,
those arms are rare, and they are so fun to watch.
Especially when a guy's, like, 5'9", 5'10". I mean, you know, he's not a big dude. Just throwing gas, though. I like that a lot. Now that brings us to the news segment here.
We have a seventh inning stretch. We're gonna have to come up with a good sounder for that, I think. So yeah,
hey, it's Harry Carey. Come on, yeah. Don't spit on that.
No,
Carey.
I'm not. I definitely am not.
But I'll work on that. We
can keep Harry Carey.
It's either that or it's Will Ferrell doing Harry Carey because it's hard.
I definitely prefer the real Harry Carey.
Well, that was the real Harry Carey. Yeah, but anyway, all right.
So we can talk about production later. So Mookie Betts is definitely part of the seventh inning stretch. It would appear that Mookie Betts, in addition to being this new 300 club, also may have a claim to the British throne. Yes. Ooh. Well, so I found I found this breakdown. Continue. Of showing that Mookie Betts is related to Meghan Markle.
Who, the now defected.
Right. It was married to Prince William Prince Harry. Sorry.
You're going to have to fill me in on my royal.
So your royal family breaks down. Yeah. Meghan Markle, an American, married.
Okay, she's American.
Married the third in line for the British crown, Harry, Prince Harry, and so, and it goes back to an Elijah Betts, who died in 1783, had two sons, Charles and Elijah, Elijah. The second had another son, Elijah F. Betts, who by 1860 had owned 46 slaves. Living on the Betts plantation, two individuals, a Jacob Betts and a Joseph Betts, lived in a house with a number of other people, and it turns out that the great great uncle to Mookie Betts married the great great aunt of Meghan Markle.
Real.
So that's the stretch right there. Due to that family relation, given the best King Ralph type scenario where the entire royal family gets wiped out in one fell swoop and the only one left is Mookie Betts by marriage.
King Ralph. That was a good pull. Wow.
Well, we've got a stretch. That's the idea. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, if he ends up winning MVP this year, you know, maybe we can start calling him Crown Prince Betts. I don't know.
I was going to say Count Betts. That sounds pretty cool.
We can get something going in LA. I don't know.
All right. Well, you know what I say to the king? Eh, screw the king. All right, we're American. Get out of here with that. But all right, that is interesting. That is interesting. There's been a lot of interesting, strange, odd occurrences happening this year. Of course,
there has. Yeah.
Now we've already talked about obviously the batting, the hitting woes from Yelly and Belly. Man, Yelich is only hitting 164. Pretty bad. I mean, Belly's not much better right now, but other guys like Andrew Benintendi, who, you know, are usually pretty consistent, he has a slug rate right now of 128.
128. How is that even possible?
Yeah. Well, he only has one extra base hit and only four hits total on the season. Insane. On the flip side, we see guys like Jose Iglesias on the Orioles sitting with a cool .395 batting average right now, you know, or Donovan Solano, you know, like or Fletcher, like we were talking about before, for the Angels. I mean, it's so weird, you know.
And then you also have other guys like, our Fomento, Lariano, the A's, has been hitting .288. Which he has hit .288 the last two seasons.
Oh, really? He's,
yeah,
he's the
move
new
Chris
Davis. Chris
Davis with yeah. a K. Yes, .288.
Really? That's pretty cool. No, and maybe if he's out for the next six games or so, I guess it'll stay that way. Now on the pitcher's side, we see someone like Hyunjin Ryu, who has usually had very low walk rates, is now sitting with a 4.05 walk-to-9 ratio right now. Whereas last year, he posted a 1.2 walk-to-9 inning ratio. And it took him 17 starts last year to match his total walks allowed in this season alone with only 4 starts. Now, he is riding the ship a little bit now. He had a quality start in his last outing in Buffalo, so we'll see how that goes. And on the team side, I doubt anyone other than Kansas City fans would have guessed that by the first quarter of the season, the Royals would be leading the American League in total bases with .270. To put this in perspective, the Dodgers, who are arguably the best team in the National League, are currently sitting at .265. So, that's pretty damn good, man. Just to see the Royals, it's kind of cool to see teams that were kind of written off. Do okay now. I can't say the same about the Tigers, but go Royals. I don't know. I've no dog in that fight. I don't really care. It's a Central. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the American League, but
touche.
I think that the way that the season started and the overall length of the season, coupled with the extra playoff slots, have given extra motivation to some teams that weren't necessarily expected to do well, but also not considered to be a bad team, to play a little bit harder.
I guess you're right.
and have a little bit of extra, hey, we really have a chance to do well this year, let's make the most of every opportunity.
That is true, because that is something I was worried about for fantasy purposes down the stretch. And even though I'm opposed to it by nature, having 16 teams make the playoffs like the NBA or whatever, for fantasy purposes, I guess it might be better because these guys will want to keep playing.
Harder.
Yeah, they're going to want to keep hitting. So, if I win the league, then I guess I'll be okay. But if I don't, it's not going to be too fun. But, the Yankees and Dodgers as a team are tied right now with 29 home runs apiece. But it does seem a bit shocking that above them, both, and above the Twins, are the Angels and the Padres,
yeah,
with 32 team home runs this year.
Yeah, that's
what's going on.
It's pretty incredible. Well,
and I don't even think Rendon has even really gotten off yet, has he? I mean, I haven't really been paying attention to him, but his home run total for the year, what does he have? 3? Yeah, I guess that's not bad considering, but still.
Well, I ran into an article today. I didn't. It was literally as I was starting to do my final prep here for the show. I ran so I didn't have time to really study it, and probably be one of the things that I bring up next episode. But it was about how some players, specifically in this instance, Mike Trout, are being pitched to differently than they have in years past.
In what way? He's raking.
And what? Right, exactly. This summary, you know, of it is that ultimately pitchers are not pitching around Mike Trout like they have in past years.
Well, so yeah, because they have to face Rendon or Ohtani.
He's seeing a lot more pitches to hit, and having, you know, that protection around him, it benefits. Yeah. Everyone, it is like the 2002 Giants,
right,
when they had Barry Bonds and Jeff Kent and Rich Aurelia reap the benefits hitting in front of both of those two players. He had like 34 home runs that year.
Yeah, that's like playing
mostly because he was getting those pitches to hit and he wasn't missing.
Right. Yeah, so, I don't want him on base.
So it was, you know, so it could be, you know, for in the Angels case for sure, that has a lot to do with it. Just the fact that their home runs might have been up regardless of the length of the season, just because of who's now in their lineup. As far as the Padres, well, I mean, you got Fernando Tatis and you've got Eric Hosmer who been doing well. So yeah, both of those teams significantly improved over the postseason. On one hand, yeah, it's really not that surprising that both of those teams have hit more home runs than the Dodgers, Yankees, and Twins based on last season totals is a little bit surprising, but the fact that their home runs are up, I don't think is.
Yeah, I agree. It's all pretty right. Crazy. I mean, and we talked about this before. We talked about, I think I predicted that Trout would finally get a home run crown this year. And then, you know, obviously he had a kid and everybody was kind of freaked out about that. And he got passed up in a lot of fantasy leagues because of that, because nobody really knew how much time he was going to miss. And then, it turns out he's just mashing. He already has 7 home runs. I mean, he's 2 off of Aaron Judge, who's, by the way, not playing today, and Trout's going to play every single game the rest of the season. Right. I mean, unless something catastrophic happens, but Trout
never hope for any injuries.
But. No, I think, and just the consistency with which he's been hitting, and not just home runs, but just extra base hits and everything. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to be able to get pitches to hit. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Well, that's true. But when you're Trout, if they don't give you one, you'll just walk. You know, just take your base.
All right.
Yeah.
I imagine that Barry Bonds would have appreciated being walked less and pitched to more, and you know his stats would have been better too.
His stats are fine. Okay. Barry,
I'm not saying that they aren't, and so is Mike Trout's. But when you get more pitches to hit, you have more opportunity. Your stats are going to be that much better.
Yes. I agree.
Okay, good.
Now, the Houston Trashtros have now blown 7 saves in this early season.
Couldn't happen to a nicer team.
Yeah, we hate to see that happen. And they're now on pace for blowing 25 just in this shortened season, where last season they blew only 20 games the entire year. Now, the flip side, the A's are sporting a very nice 2.25 bullpen ERA with the notable multi-inning reliever Birch Smith, who I'm sure everybody is very familiar with now, yet to allow a run in 10 and a third innings. Man, he's crazy. This guy goes out and throws like 3 innings, 3 and a third, like just lights out, man. I don't know if you've watched him pitch, but he is legit.
I'm
waiting for them to give him some sort of save opportunities. I think he actually got a save. He got a 3-inning save.
That's great. He's that quintessential and rare middle relief pitcher who is capable of going multiple innings successfully.
Yeah.
It's, you know, an incredible advantage to have if you have one of those guys who can go out there and give you 3+ innings.
Yeah, he's legit. He's kind of, and the A's are kind of the opposite of the Phillies right now.
Yeah.
We have a reliever ERA of 10.19.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. That's when they're leading, and it's a higher ERA than any other team's bullpen ERA when trailing.
Yeah.
So, talk about blown saves.
Now, would you believe that the Rockies have a combined starter ERA of 3.3? After last year, they posted, of course, a major league worst 5.87.
I don't know.
Anything can happen this year.
Well, anything can happen. Maybe the humidor is working better than it has.
Games are like 12 to 10 and 14 to 6. And, in that sense.
I know that in the case of the Rockies, they have a couple of pitchers now who grew up in the greater Colorado area at altitude. So they've got guys who are used to pitching in the thin atmosphere.
That would be the smartest move for them, obviously. I mean, I'm sure they've tried, but to get guys that are used to that and that know what their curveball does.
And have a good enough arm to, make it to the big leagues.
Well, yeah. There's
there's that, too.
Easier said than done. That is true.
There's a lot of kids who grew up, learning how to pitch in the Denver area and at altitude that, don't have the just raw talent to make the big leagues anyway.
That's true. And then if they do have that much talent, some other team's going
to right. And then the Rockies have to figure out how to get them on their team.
Yeah.
That's a whole other issue.
Now, what were you talking about, Matt Chapman?
Oh, Matt Chapman. Oh, well, he's been taking target practice, throwing at the cardboard cutouts in the stands.
What?
He's been taking the opportunity to throw at the throw at the cardboard cutouts, and he's found them very durable. Everywhere. But there's one instance when the A's were up in Seattle where Chapman was a little bit mad at something and just winged the ball up in the stands as hard as he could at one of those cardboard cutouts. It hit that cardboard cutout, bounced off, and didn't leave a mark. It was not damaged at all, which, of course, it upset him further, made him even more mad.
What was it, like his ex-girlfriend or something?
I don't know about that, but I think it was just a random way to get rid of some frustration.
Was this perhaps like the Trevor Bauer rage throw over center field?
It could be. I think it was just sling it into the stands because getting rid of the ball you warm up with.
Be careful. I mean, if he makes that a habit, come next year, he's going to forget that the people are real.
Maybe. Take that someone's remains eye to out. Be seen. Who knows? Give someone a concussion, a nice big black eye.
Nothing for you!
Okay. Now, I was just going to talk a little bit about Tatis Jr., just because, this guy is just insane.
He also might end up being pretty good here.
He already is. if the season ends today, he's MVP. As much as I hate to admit it.
Is it more so than Blackman?
Yeah, because he's stealing bases, and he's just a madman. And his defense is arguably better and a tougher job. But, yeah, I would give it to Tatis Jr. over Blackman. Although, Blackman's hitting 470.
I mean, Blackman is leading in most of the offensive categories at this point.
That is crazy. Tatis's home run on Sunday gave him an even 30 in his first 100 games of his career, which has only been done 8 times in history. Guys like Mark McGwire, Cody Bellinger, Pete Alonso, Gary Sanchez, Jose Abreu, Rudy York, Aaron Judge, and Ryan Braun. Now, of course, this makes Tatis the first shortstop to ever do this. No shortstop has ever done that. It's pretty insane.
We're looking at you, Alex Rodriguez.
A-Rod? Yeah, I know. Although he did have a pretty similar triple slash line to A-Rod, but still better, arguably. Even better than Trout's, really. I would posit. But, he's also the first player to do this while accumulating 20 steals. So obviously it's still early in the season, but looking forward, only two players have won the home run crown at age 21. Eddie Matthews and Sam Crawford, but that's going back to 1953 and 1901 respectively. Among players that are 21 or younger debuting in the modern era, Tatis is first in home runs with 30, slugging 625, and OPS, which is over 1,000. Second on that list for slugging, Joe DiMaggio, 599. Second on that OPS list, Albert Pujols, 980. So, I mean...
Yeah, he's in some good company. Pretty good. There's no doubt. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
He's hitting 320 right now. Mike Trout was hitting 302 at that point. Is a 625 slugging. Trout only had a 497 at that point. I mean, it's just crazy, man. It's pretty nuts. This guy, 70 ribbies, 30 home runs. I mean, that's a great season in 162 games, let alone 100. Now, it's just, he's been on my mind because the Dodgers have been playing the Padres a lot lately, and it's been a bit of a thorn in my side. But anyway.
Yeah, no, he's a good player. He'll be exciting to watch for the next few years, and it's just unfortunate that he is in Padres brown and yellow.
Yeah.
Something that we can both agree
quite
on.
Unfortunate.
No matter what.
Man, did you see Dustin May strike out Machado with the exact same pitch, like a week apart? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He just can't see that filthy two-seamer.
Yeah.
That two-seamer has the most ridiculous break.
He made up for it, though, with that grand slam that he hit, though, huh?
I reject your reality. Now, before we get into the trivia, I mean, did you have anything else right now?
Not really. The only other thing that, you know, I want to mention be just a congratulation to the city of Buffalo for hosting their first Major League Baseball game in 105 years.
It's pretty cool.
I guess the only other tidbit that I got that I would like, you know, that was the thing is the Tiger and Pirates game. On August the 8th the Tigers ended up hitting four home runs in the first inning.
Really?
It was the first time that the Tigers as a team had done that since a game in June of 74 against the Indians. But that is not even
Tigers. Wow.
The most impressive part about it. It's the first time in Pirates history going back 139 years to 1882.
Whoa.
That the Pirates as a team had given up four home runs in the first inning.
Wow. So basically it's never happened.
It's never happened in the history of the Pirates.
That was back when there weren't even like fences in the outfield.
Oh, yeah.
You just had to like run and get it.
Right.
Wow. That's pretty insane.
It is. So that's...
Of all teams, especially to do that, the Tigers.
Right.
Without Castellanos. Man.
And, you know, the Tigers might be one of those teams that are motivated by the extra slots for the postseason.
Yeah? Well, I don't think it's going to help them much. But, you know, you never know. That park is just too hard to hit in. I think Castellanos has kind of proven that now. I mean, I'm sure he's changed his swing a little bit, but this guy is just raking at the Great American Ballpark. Now, yeah, you're right. The Buffalo, man, it is pretty cool to see that. And, you know, just watching the Salem Field or whatever get completely transformed looked pretty awesome.
Yeah, they had to make it up to Major League Special. And imagine the Blue Jays AAA team next year. We're going to have some, like, super top-notch facility to go and play in. Make the rest of the AAA teams very jealous.
That's true. Now, of course, Vladdy's been a little Vladdy Jr., as we like to call him. You know, he hasn't really been as great as he should be or everybody thought he would be. But he is going back to Buffalo, and he's had some pretty good success playing in AAA Buffalo, yeah. In 2018, he played 30 games and hit .336 with an OPS of .978. 2019, only played 9 games, but still, hit .367 with an OPS of 1.141. Pretty damn good. Combined, he had 9 home runs, 24 ribbies, 19 walks with only 12 strikeouts in 162 plate appearances. Pretty cool. So maybe that's all he needs, just to get a little bit, you know, just a little extra motivation. Now, there's also been a strong Negro League presence in Buffalo going back, you know, to the 50s with the Indianapolis Clowns from 51 to 55, who won 3 titles in that period. I don't know why they call them the Indianapolis Clowns when they played in Buffalo. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not that smart. I couldn't really figure that out. But this is also where, in 1952, Hammerin' Hank Aaron got his start, though at that time his nickname was Porkchop.
Porkchop.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. Where did Porkchop come from?
Apparently the stories go, that's the only thing he knew how to, like, what to order, like, when he was, like, at a restaurant. He didn't know anything else. Supposedly. I don't know if that's true. All right. The Brave Scout saw him, and 2 years later, he's in the big league. So there's some storied history out there in Buffalo.
Which, yeah, there is. There's some. That is. Thank you for that. That's great.
Yes, sir. Now, before we get into trivia, got a really cool email from David S. He just he said, just wanted to say, I love the show, and please keep it up. He also asked for, he's like, if there's a Patreon or any other money-raising situation, he'd be glad to pay. And, you know, we should probably talk about this more, because we will. There is. On the Podomatic website, podomatic.com/podcast/West Coast Bias, or just search for us on there. There is a PayPal set up on there that goes directly to us and just paying our dues, really, because, I mean, it's not exorbitantly expensive to do the show. And, you know, I don't want to pander, because, you know, we do it out of, because we want to do it, you know.
Right. We have fun talking about baseball.
There are some overhead costs that it would be nice to be cleared. So if you want to donate a buck, 25 cents, $1,000, whatever you want to do, it is on the Podomatic website. There is a PayPal button. Now, it's a little strange because I don't think it's actually on the main page, which is weird. You have to, like, click on an episode, like any episode, you click on it, and then there's a... I think there's a Patreon too, but that's not set up. So
yeah, don't click on that. But
PayPal is set up. So if you'd like to donate some change, that would be nice, and would actually help immensely.
No, we're also looking. You know, we're happy to take a sponsor too. That's the thing.
Like, I would like to avoid that. I mean, it would be nice if it's somebody like local. That would be cool. But, you know, I don't want to be reading
any ad copy on the
air. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Right. That being said, you know, give me a few commas, you know, I might do it. But yeah, it just, you know, that's what the show. I don't like when I hear the podcast break halfway through or 2 or 3 times in the middle of the show. And I know that's radio. That's how it's always been. But you know, I would like to keep it ad free. So if you could donate, that'd be super cool. And, you know, all the money will just go to the show. I mean, I know our mics aren't the best, but I think we actually are, you know, our sonically, I think we sound pretty decent compared to other fledgling podcasts out there. Anyway, enough of jerking ourselves off here. What was, but I just wanted to say thanks to David, because that was pretty cool, man.
Yes, David S., so where is he from? Did he say?
Doesn't say. No? Nah, you know, and I don't want to expose him too much, but it's cool. And I'm really bad at checking the emails as I should. Pretty much usually, like, before we do an episode, I'll go, okay, who answered?
Do we even say, I don't even think we even said our email address.
I said it. I think did? I was in.
Okay.
baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter @WestCoastBiasBB, like the BB gun. Now, what was last week's trivia question?
Last week's trivia question was, what is the only team in American League history to score 14 runs and strike out 19 opponents in the same game?
Ooh, interesting. It's only happened...
It's only happened once in American League history, going back to 1901?
Since the American League was formed. Name the only team in American League history to score 14 runs and strike out 19 opponents in a single game. Alrighty, we got Randall from the Sunset I'm assuming SF, says the 89 A's.
89 A's. Interesting, but no.
They had Bash some Brothers.
They had some great home run hitters, and sure. They had some great pitchers. But, yeah. But no.
All right. We got Mitch T. Says 2016 Indians. Ooh.
2016 Indians.
That's interesting. Yeah, man. It Kluber, is, yeah. Carrasco. Yeah.
But no, they made the playoffs. The thing. Yeah. You got to score 14 runs in a game and 19 strikeouts in a game. Both of these don't happen too often in the majors, let alone in the same game. So
yeah, this is tough. I literally have no idea. All right, we got last one. Vinny in Arizona says it's got to be the 07 Rangers. I remember that game well. Huh? That's it. I remember that game well. No.
Well, no. It wasn't the Rangers.
Ooh, Vinny's not happy with you right now.
No, I imagine he's not. And I might have to. Well, maybe not. I'm not gonna apologize.
All right,
for
let me find.
Do you have another guess, or okay, do you have a guess yourself?
The modern day record of 30 runs was set on August 22nd, 2007, by the Texas Rangers against the Baltimore Orioles. Interesting. Right.
No, that would be a memorable game.
Rangers scored 5 in the 4th, 9 in the 6th, 10 in the 8th, 6 in the 9th. Wow, okay. Yeah, I guess if I was a Rangers fan, I'd probably remember that game,
But how many strikeouts did they get against the other team
There's the rub.
That is the thing. Yeah. So it may have been a little bit of a trick question.
Uh-oh.
Because the answer,
how dare you,
is that it just happened.
2020.
The answer is the Tampa Bay Rays on July 27th scored 14 runs and struck out 19 opponents in that in that game.
Against who?
I, of course, did not write that down. Have to
losers need not apply. Only the victors write history. So, all right. Well, no winners, and I would not have guessed that. I feel like I would have seen that, though. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember I passed along one. And say, hey, that one. Is a good question. That is, you know.
All right. So no winners, no free beer or chicken dinners. Now, this week's trivia question. And I will put it on Twitter. I forgot to do that last time after all that hoopla. You can answer on their email. You know how to do it. Bumgarner may become the last pitcher to homer. His home run off the Rockies' Jeff Hoffman in the bottom of the third inning in his last start as a Giant gave him his 19th career home run. And it was the last home run by a pitcher in 2019.
And since 2020 is the universal DH.
And I am terrified to say that I wouldn't be surprised if they just rolled that rule over, even though I think they have to wait till the end of 2021 to officially agree on that. It wouldn't surprise me if Manfred just did some unilateral move and just like, no, we're just going to have universal DH. Anyway, because the players seem to like it, so I don't know. I think it's just the fans that don't like it. Anyway.
Well, National League fans, anyway.
So, basically, my fear is he may be the last one ever. But the question, who was the last American League pitcher to homer before the DH?
Okay. That's a great question.
Yeah. Who was the last AL pitcher to homer before the DH? Leave your answer at Twitter, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. You know where to get us.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's pretty good. Now, I hope it's not Bumgarner as the last, but we'll see.
Right. I mean,
hopefully Kershaw or Greinke will get a crack at it. Oh, no, Greinke's in the American League. On that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And just remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.